I'm interviewing Ann Brown for the Matheson Historical Center. On March 4th, 1999, at her home at 1125 Northwest 109th Drive in Gainesville, Florida. Ann, would you please state your full name and birth date for the tape, please?
My name is Ann Towson Brown. I was born September 29th, 1918, in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Well, tell me a little bit about your parents. Who were your parents?
My aunt, who lived in Gainesville, was Mary Norman Towson, who married Samuel McKinstry Mixon and came to Gainesville in 1919. She came to Gainesville because her brother, some years before, had married, her brother was Harry Towson, and he had married Susanna Price Lambert from Baltimore, and they ended up in Gainesville. I don't know how that happened, but they did, because Harry Towson was from Lynchburg, and my Aunt Sue was from Baltimore. But they moved to Gainesville, and soon after, she invited her sister to come to visit, and she did, and she met Sandy Graham, and they were married, and then they lived in Gainesville. And not too long after that, they invited my Uncle Harry's sister, my Aunt Mary, to come to visit, and they introduced her to Sam Mixon, and they were married, and then they lived here. So that was the beginning of the migration here. And then in, I think it was 1925, I was just seven, I came to live with my aunt and uncle from Lynchburg because my mother and father had separated, and they moved, and they were not together, so my home was broken. And I came and lived with my aunt. And so I lived here until I was married in 1942. And Gainesville was a wonderful place to live, and I enjoyed being here the whole time.
Well, tell me, what were your parents' names? You haven't told me
their
names.
My father was Matthew Edward Towson, and he was born in Lynchburg, and my mother was Ruth Morgan Towson. Her maiden name was Morgan, and she was born in Danville, Virginia, but her family at some point moved to Lynchburg. I'm not really terribly accurate about these dates. I do have some written information, but I don't remember those things.
Sure. Well, they're not so important to the history of Gainesville as the Mixon family,
yes.
and you.
Right.
You were how old when you came then?
Well, I entered third grade.
Third grade. And you went?
And the first person I met, Mary Parker McCraw, worked at the schools in the principal's office. And she took me out at recess my first day at school and introduced me to Sonny Dell. And we've been friends ever since. So my classmates were Martha Baxter, Jane Bishop, and Mary Swearingen, and a girl named Billy Rawls, whose father was a captain in the Army and stationed at the university, active in the ROTC. They were here a few years, but then they moved on when he was transferred. And Bill Graham and Sonny were a grade ahead of me, and Finley Cannon and May Hampton were a grade behind me at school, and so I knew all of them then, and they were my playmates.
Mm-hmm. You went to Kirby Smith, then known as East Side School, I guess, and it went from grade 1 through 12 in those days.
I suppose they didn't have kindergarten then.
I don't believe they did. I'm not sure.
Well, but I started in third grade. My teacher was named Mrs. Eldridge, and poor Mrs. Eldridge, she ended up in a mental hospital the next year.
What did you all do to her, that poor woman? You don't know.
I don't know. But we all remember that she had a big crush on Billy Ross, who was a very attractive little girl. And I think we all sort of resented that she was the teacher's pet. So maybe we gave her too hard a time.
Uh-huh. Well, so you went from third grade on through high school, or sixth grade?
Oh, well, and then in seventh grade, we moved over to Maiden High School, Gainesville High School.
They had opened that school by then.
Yeah.
So you finished high school at GHS.
Yeah.
Or was it first called West Side School? Do you remember that?
It was always GHS,
always
when
GHS.
I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went to Tallahassee, to Florida State College for Women.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about your younger days when you were a student.
Well,
what were your activities, and where did you go in the summer?
Well, I'll tell you, we had the most wonderful time. I would think it's sort of a Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer life that we and our group led. The woods behind Uncle Sam's house were totally undeveloped and stretched on. There was an airport at the end of what was Roper Street. And the woods behind his house, he lived on East Seminary Street. And that started where the old seminary was, which was the Methodist Church then, and went straight east all the way to Waldo Road. And he lived east of the duck pond, about three blocks. And behind there was all woods. So on Saturdays, we wore what we called overalls, which were the regular with old fashioned overalls with a bib and straps over the shoulders, and we would play in the woods, and we would cook. Our parents let us. We built fires, because we thought we were way out in the woods. Actually, I'm sure we could be seen from the back door, but we felt that we were way out in the woods, and we would build fires, and we would bake potatoes. And the potatoes were usually raw in the middle and charcoal for about a half inch on the outside. But we took out whatever we had to drink, fruit juice or whatever, water, maybe milk, I don't remember that. But I know we cooked, and we had hamburgers, and we had hot dogs, and we had fruit and cookies. And we did that on a regular basis, quite a lot. And then we would build camps. Sometimes they were tree houses, and sometimes they were. Uncle Sam showed us how to make a little cottage out of straw. The wild, looks like wheat, the wild wheat that grew then. We would cut it, and it would be a long length, and we would have a frame made of string and stakes that we drove in the ground, and make a little house, and then we would play in our house. Sometimes we'd make the house out of palmetto fronds that we cut, and we'd make a house, and we would play various games, and sometimes it would be a house in the jungle, and sometimes we were Tarzan, and we would swing through the trees, we thought. We'd trot through the woods. There were a lot of paths that went through the woods. We'd trot through the woods with our spears and our lassos, being Tarzan.
Did you ever camp out? Stay overnight?
Not overnight.
And you would probably be junior high school at that time.
Junior high school. By 12, I think this had pretty much stopped. Because by 12, of course, we all drove cars, because there was no license requirement. And as soon as we could drive cars, we gave up these other games. But until then, we played. And I think I was about sixth or seventh grade when Santa Claus brought me. We didn't really believe in Santa Claus, but it was safer to cling to the belief. And he brought me an electric stove one year. And then we would gather in our kitchen and make toast and tea and whatever else we could think of to cook on a little electric stove with an oven. And we thought that was a lot of fun. And these games included not only Mary and Jane and Martha and Sue Bryant had moved over to this part of town by then, and May. But we had Finley Cannon and Bill Graham and Harry and Lewis Towson and other little boys from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we we just all played together and had a good time. The boys weren't in on all these things. It was more often girls. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, Gainesville had a group of Follies that came every year. I thought I was going to be able to tell you the name. Gene Trader's Follies, something like that. And all the talent was local. And they taught us to sing and to dance and to do little scenes. And everybody was in it. It wasn't a children's thing. The whole community took part with all these skits. And so that was a great excitement for us. And one year, there was a skit. I don't remember the thing, but it was two adults. And one of the characters was a French maid. And she was in a little black uniform with a white ruffled cap. And her line was, "Oui, madame." And we were very impressed by this foreign language production. So we played French maid for months after that. There was a little house in the back of the garage that was my playhouse. So we would take turns wearing some kind of costume would invent and say, "Oui, madame."
Well, now, did they charge admission for this? I suppose they did.
Oh, the Gene Trader, yes. Yeah. They may have been a benefit. I'm sure there would be a record, because it went on for years. Hmm. I think it was still going on when I was through high school. And
so that would have been the, you graduated from high school in?
36,
so this would have been the early 30s.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anybody else talk about it, so maybe we'll
find out
if I'll ask somebody else.
There must have been a lot of newspaper, because surely they wanted publicity.
Sure.
But for us, it was a little girls kind of thing. Well, it wasn't, because I remember the boys in the old parish house at Holy Trinity. That was where we had our rehearsals, mm-hmm. and they had a balcony. And the boys had their thing was to do a farmer type thing. They wore overalls and kerchiefs and sang a country kind of a song. And I can remember the boys would stay there and watch the little girls. We were I can still remember the song, but I can't sing anymore. But we were fairies. We're fairies fleet from yon cool retreat. And so they would watch us, and then we would all stay and watch them do their farmer thing. And so this was sort of a big deal.
Was this just one performance they put on usually?
I think maybe they had two.
Maybe they had two.
On, I think probably Friday and Saturday or something.
Do you think people came from out of town, or was this?
Well, I don't know that. I know all our parents were there.
Yeah, and well, some of the parents were in it too, weren't they?
Oh yeah. So yeah. It was for the whole community, and so mm-hmm. of course the more people in it, the more people came.
Right.
And it seemed like a very big thing to me.
And they put it on where?
Gene Trader's Follies.
Where did they put it on?
In the high school auditorium.
In the high school auditorium.
Yeah.
Well, that's something.
Well, and, now, the, and the, you know, the, what was the new high school there?
Sure.
The one that's no longer there.
Uh-huh. Well, now, you started going to dances and dating somewhere along in high school or junior high school.
Yeah. I think that I was 14 when I had my first date. And I went to a little women's dance, mm-hmm. and they used to have quite a few of those. I remember the person who took me to that first dance was Henry Chitty. And that was very exciting because he was very tall and sophisticated. We were 14.
And he was 14 also.
Yeah. We were in the same room at school. Mm-hmm. And so that was great excitement. And as I say, we all drove, so we came and
well now nobody very few had their own cars. They drove their family car. Most families had one car.
That's right.
And then you'd get to drive the family car on a special on occasion.
Yes, that's right. And for girls, our families mainly would send me to the grocery store, which was George Dell's, which is downtown near the square. And it wasn't on the square then, it was on University Avenue around by Vidal Drugstore. But anyway, she would send me for maybe a loaf of bread that she had forgotten. And then I would get in the car and go pick up Mary and Jane and Martha and Sue and May to ride with me downtown. And then as long as we were downtown, we would drive out University Avenue and come back. So this errand, which would be a 10-minute errand, could take as much as an hour.
And you'd drive out and see what university boys you could see.
Yeah.
Because by the time you got to be high school, you knew university students as well as local boys.
Well, that was later, of course. That was
like 10th, 11th.
Well, 11th and 12th grade, I think. I don't think I had dates with university boys till then. Might have been 10th, but I remember 11th and 12th I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then some of the boys we knew were out at the university then. Yeah,
some of the older ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Gainesville was a fun place. But now, what did you do in the summertime?
Well, in the summertime, my mother, by then, had remarried, and she lived in New York City. And I was with her
all summer,
most of the summer. And that was a lot of fun. I learned my way around New York because by then, I was 15 or so, and I knew how to get downtown on the bus and how to get to the theater district. And so I could do that. And then we would go, she and her husband, my stepfather, and he was a wonderful man. He was a lawyer in New York. And anyway, we would go to Virginia Beach for a month. Mm-hmm. And then they had a place in the Catskill Mountains, and we would go there for a month. And I loved both those places and had lots of friends. And so that was very exciting. I liked that. And
what did you go home for Christmas, or did you usually spend Christmas in?
No, I was here because this was really my home.
Really,
I visited that, and my father lived in Clearwater, and he by then had married again, and I would visit him from time to time. Sometime in summer, I would be down with him for a while in Clearwater, and I liked that too because then I would go to the beach and have a good time.
But you ended up feeling more like Sam and Mary were your parents.
Well, they were, except, I'll tell you, it's a funny thing, I had 6 parents.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a pretty good ratio, 6 to 1 for parents.
And they all treated you like your daughter.
Because I had no competition. And so I really found that a very, very good situation.
You were the only child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, then were you ever in Gainesville to go with all your cousins that had property on Kingsley Lake?
Yes.
Or would that be mostly weekends? And
no, Bill Graham was reminding me. You see, Bill's mother married Bill and I share mutual first cousins.
Uh-huh.
His mother's sister married my father's brother. So we were all raised as cousins. And Bill was remembering not long ago how on weekends the Graham family, which was extensive, and the Towson family, and various other, by extension, related people, would go on picnics to Post Springs or to some of the other springs around town.
Where's Post Springs?
Well, I don't know. It's recently, I think, become a county property.
Oh.
But it was, Uncle Sam had a Model T, so we could get there in a Model T without too much time involved. And I can remember playing, and that the water was always cold. It's some of the other springs around. We went there,
Magnesia Springs. Did you remember that one?
Yeah, I do remember it, but that had a swimming pool. These were natural springs.
I see.
And I used to go to Magnesia and to Glen Springs, but not at that time. And it was, we had a wonderful time. Martha and I reminisce a lot about the things we did. And then Martha and I used to play dolls a lot. All of us played dolls. And we played dress up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember being in the bishop's attic. That was a play area. And we would dress up in the older members, cast off clothes, and we had high heels that would fit over our shoes, and we would clack around the sidewalks, and we played dolls. We had all kinds of dolls. We had baby dolls, and we had little girl dolls, and we played paper dolls, and we were very busy. And then we had roller skates, and in by the park, you know, the old park there at Oak Street and Seminary Street. And
right by, behind the Methodist Church.
Yeah.
Still there, and
yeah,
I think it's Roper
right.
Park.
Yeah.
Isn't it called Roper Park?
Not then. It
no.
Was not,
it didn't have a name.
I don't think it did.
Uh-huh.
But May Hampton lived on one side, and Martha on one side, and the Graves family, and, mm-hmm, you know, right by your grandparents'
right
house. And so anyway, we used to play there, and we roller skated in the park. And that was something we did every afternoon after school. We'd roller skate around and around the park, play tag and things. Mm-hmm. And then at one time, we played hockey. And we used tin cans for the puck and bamboo sticks for the hockey stick. It had a curved end, and we would cut the bamboo, sometimes out of the bamboo in the park, and you had to dig up the root, and then you'd make it the right size. And we loved that, we did that. And sometimes we'd play over on Palmetto Street in my neighborhood, because we walked everywhere, so it was to your neighborhood, that neighborhood, from my neighborhood, was 5 or 6 blocks away, so they were two separate.
Right, well, you could, and you could go down to the boulevard and play,
yeah,
in that area with the duck pond. I guess,
yeah,
the duck pond was there.
We could have, I don't think we ever did,
did
but
that.
We did play on Palmetto Street in front of Bill Graham's house.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a co-ed activity, boys,
sure,
and girls playing together.
Did you walk to school, or did you?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Walked to Eastside School, but now you didn't walk to...
Yes, I did.
Walked to GHS.
Yes, I remember. Now, not every day, because the White Sisters lived right on the corner by us, and they were very generous and took me and some of... There were some neighbors named Gibson. I also used to play with them. There were 5 of those children that we would play together, and they took... They had a back seat, and they would... take as many as fit in the back seat, which was 3 probably, and I was 1, and then some of the Gibsons would be in the car too.
But then you walked home from school usually.
And then we'd walk home from school.
Dawdling on the way.
Yeah, yeah, it was a long walk.
It's a very long walk.
Long walk. And, but they would take us in the morning and for lunch, you know, we all came home for lunch.
All came home for lunch.
And. We had our dinner in the middle of the day, and of course I ate before. I didn't eat with my family at noon because Uncle Sam's lunch hour was later.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when I was in high school, I'm trying to make it all come out, but anyway, as far as dates are concerned, but when I was in high school, and if you had a certain grade level, you could have an examination exemption. And you could have a study hall exemption. So I had my study halls right after lunch, and I had exemptions. And so I would come home with the Mrs. White, and then I would have my, I didn't have to go back,
mm-hmm,
for 2 periods after lunch hour. So I wouldn't have to, I think our school ended at 4 o'clock, and I wouldn't have to be back till 2:30 or 3 probably. So I would have my lunch, and then I would sunbathe, which is too bad now, but I loved it then. And then Uncle Sam would drive me back as far as Bad Hardware, and then I had to walk from Bad Hardware to the high school after lunch. And then there was a while, I guess maybe junior and senior years, I don't know, when Finley Cannon had a car, and he had it full of children from the neighborhood, and I was one of those that would get a ride with Finley back and forth to school. So I didn't really have to walk every single day the whole way, but I consider walking a part of my school career.
Who were your favorite teachers in high school then? And you mentioned
the
White Sisters.
They were wonderful.
Now they
both
taught,
of them.
They taught
English,
both
and,
of them.
Grammar and literature.
Mm-hmm.
And they were absolutely wonderful, first-class teachers. And then I had Miss Bina Shannon in 7th grade for math, and she taught my Uncle Sam when he was in school.
Bena, how do you spell that?
I always thought of it as B-E-N-A. But I don't know. And I'm sure she's in the records, because actually she was in one of the things I read, maybe Addison Pounds. She was an assistant principal at Buchholz for the lower grades, 7, 8, and 9. And
you say Buchholz, but it was
GHS.
Yeah.
Professor Buchholz
was the principal.
And she was the assistant principal for the junior high. And
then they had a grade school there too.
Yes, but that was
later.
That had nothing to do with us,
right,
because we moved over from we had Cornelia Machen, and we had Teresa Graves, and then there were others, and Mrs. Hudson, who was sweet. Mm-hmm. And
now, they didn't have physical education at that time.
Well, yes, we did. Not the way they have it now. Cornelia Machen taught physical ed, and we would go out on the playground and do, you know, jumping jacks and bends and that kind of thing.
Did you play many games? We didn't have any sports facilities for girls.
No, we had no sports, and we didn't play games. If we did, I didn't play them. We sat on the sidewalk and played jacks.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Bishop was very good at jacks. I was very bad.
Well, the boys played football, I guess.
I guess they played on their side. We were divided.
Sure.
And they played on their side. I don't know what they played.
Well, I've heard the story that Professor Buchholz drew a line in the sand. And the boys had to stay on one side and the girls on another. Is that something you remember?
High school. I do remember that.
I don't know. Somebody told me that in an interview.
I think that was true.
He was.
And I don't know whether you'll have to ask somebody else. It seems to be that we have walked in different lines in the halls at school, the boys and the girls.
Now, your dances were held at the Women's Club right across the street?
Yeah, or
were
and
they
at the Old Legion Hall.
Which is now the Matheson Center.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But those, the school was, I did not like Kirby Smith's. I didn't like my schoolwork or my teachers very much. But I love the teachers. Miss Dorothy Smith was a math teacher. She was a wonderful teacher and very good.
Did you have Roxy Baker?
Yes, she taught physical ed, I think.
Oh, did she?
I might be wrong about that, but she taught English.
Yes, I thought she was English. She might have been phys ed too.
But she might have been phys ed, it seems to me. And then they had more of an organized thing. We played basketball. Mm-hmm. But we never had uniforms. We just played in our school dress.
Sure.
And we all wore dresses. We just played in our school clothes. And of course, Thelma Bolt was our speech teacher. And she taught us poems we all still remember and can recite. Mm-hmm. We had reciting in unison. It was great.
And but you didn't have art classes or music. Did you?
I don't remember that.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember having anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And we had art in sixth grade. I can remember we had, which consisted of having crayons and paper that we colored, but not any organized program.
So all of your time with the Mixons was spent in their home on Seminary Street,
right.
Which is now Fifth Avenue, Northeast Fifth Avenue.
I think it's 820. It turned into 820, but it was 1138.
Uh-huh. Now, we haven't talked a whole lot about them. We have an article that was written by in Jess Davis's book, which I'm not going to read, but we are going to enter it into the transcription of this interview, which tells about Sam and about his parents and so on. So we'll have that in the interview. But now, by the time both the Mixons died after you were gone.
Yes, mainly in 1963.
Right, and we had
and
her obituary.
Uncle Sam, I think, was in
75. Right. So after you finished high school, you went away to college at Florida State College for Women, and you stayed there and all 4 years?
Yeah, graduated.
What did you major
in? Journalism.
Journalism.
I always thought that I would go to New York and get a job somehow in the field of journalism, because I was really interested in it. But I never got around to going. I talked about it a lot, but I never left Gainesville. When I finished, I got a job. My first job was at the Student Union building. Billy Matthews was the director, mm-hmm. and I worked as a secretary.
Now tell me that year. That year would have been?
In 40, 41.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left that job and I worked for Garland Powell at the radio station.
WRUF.
WRUF. And at that time, it was just before World War II was mm-hmm. Starting, and he could see that it was coming. Well, actually, I suppose it was 1941, and we had been attacked, and it had started. Mm-hmm. And he could see that the boys who did the announcing would be drafted, probably. And so I went to apply for a job as a secretary, and he gave me a test with a, you know, a recorded, a microphone and a test. And I thought, well, that's an interesting way they interview for secretaries, but it wasn't any problem. And he hired me to be an announcer. And so, and I had some secretarial duties, but I was going to be an announcer. Well, I thought that was wonderful. I love that.
I bet.
And so it was quite a lot of fun working there. I was the only girl, and these boys were very serious about their work. But they also played tricks on each other, like setting your script on fire as you were reading. And you have this news thing that would come over the ticker tape, and it would be a long thing, and the bottom would start
flaming.
And doing things to distract you.
Did they do that to you as well?
Well, I think they did, but you know, it wasn't a danger. It was just a terrible, disconcerting thing. And we had to, well, everything was done manually. You put a record on a player, and then you had to rewind it to program it to just, so that it would come on at exactly the moment you wanted it to. And I had a program that was aimed at the soldiers at Camp Blanding, and it was there was a very popular program called Reveille with Beverly that came over one of the national things. So I was an imitation of that kind of thing, and I was to be on when the boys were waking up in the morning and could listen to the radio. And we had certain restrictions because of the war. We had to not play. If someone called in and said, play Moon Over Miami at 6 o'clock, you know, Thursday morning, we couldn't do that because maybe that was a code for something.
Right.
So, and they were at that time having the submarines off the coast of Florida. Mm-hmm. So there was a reason to be cautious.
Sure.
So we could play it someday unannounced or, you mm-hmm. know, something, but not.
Not at a certain
no,
time.
No.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That they were thinking about
yes.
that. So you did,
yeah.
you were a disc jockey as
yeah.
well as a news,
yeah.
news person.
And I wrote some script. I liked
wrote
that.
Wrote some script. Well, that
and,
must have been fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, did you and, date some of those boys that worked out there?
Well, no, no, they, I didn't. They were, you know, we would see them. The Powells would have parties for the staff,
uh-huh.
and we would all go together, and that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as a result of that, I took some speech classes, and I was in some of the plays. Dr. Constance was the.
That's Phil Constance.
Yes.
C-O-N-S-T-A-N-S.
Right, and the theater is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's now. It's
right, named for him.
Well, he was the director and producer of the plays, so I was in some of those, and that was.
Well, now, you were not a student, but you still participate.
Well,
at the
I
university.
Was working at the university.
You were working
so
at part of the university,
mm-hmm,
so.
And I was taking speech.
And you could take speech. Now,
mm-hmm.
that was even in the wintertime, even though the school
yeah.
was not co-ed at that
That's
time.
Right.
They did
yeah.
take some girls for certain things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably just because you were working.
Well,
you
they
think?
Had other girls in the cast, so I.
But I mean, as far as classes.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have a lot of women in the
speech
in the classes, would they?
No, maybe they didn't. You know, I don't remember that too well.
Uh-huh.
I remember the plays that we had, and they were fun. And so I did that, and then at that time I met Hunt, my husband, who was from New York City and was in the Navy. He was a naval aviator, and he was being trained in Jacksonville. And I used to go to Jacksonville a lot for dances. I had friends there. They would come here. When we were in college, I always had a lot of friends who would come for the weekends at the university. And some of them were from Jacksonville, and I used to visit there. And in one of those visits, I met Hunt. My friend Pat Stewart. I had arranged a date for Hunt to take me to a dance. So that's how we met, and we were soon married. And then
what year were you married?
1942, July 42. So
now the war was still on.
Oh yeah.
And you were married in Gainesville?
Yes, we were married at Holy Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you have a big wedding?
Well, it wasn't a big wedding, but it was a nice wedding. We had four ushers and a best man. And the boys were all in navy whites because they were Hunt's friends from the service.
Mm-hmm.
Addison Pound was an usher because at the last minute, one of the ushers was sent overseas, and so he filled in. But he was wearing navy whites at that time, too.
So you had bridesmaids, of course.
I had one.
Just one.
Just one. Because all my friends were away. Very few of my friends were here.
You think most of them had gotten married?
They'd gotten married. I was one of the last to be married, even though we'd only been out of college 2 years. But the war speeded things up, and
yes,
there were very few of them.
So who was your bridesmaid?
Uncle Sam's niece, who was, you know, sort of a cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been married in June in Orlando, and I was at her wedding, and then she was in my wedding in July.
And her name was?
Louise Jourdan.
Jourdan?
Yeah. J-O-U-R-D-A-N from Orlando.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And she's mentioned in Uncle Sam's obituary. By then she was married. I've forgotten her name now. Lytton Waterhouse.
Oh.
And I was in her wedding when she was Louise Jourdan, and then she was Louise Waterhouse, and I was in her wedding. So then she was in mine the next month. So then
you quit your job, I guess.
Yes, I did. Uh-huh. I quit the job.
And he was stationed in Jacksonville, so you...
Then he got his wings in Miami.
You met him in Jacksonville and dated him in Jacksonville.
And then he was transferred to Miami.
And that's when you got married.
When he got his wings, we were married.
Okay. Did you ever go down to Miami to visit?
Yes, I went and visited Louise.
Oh, she was living there.
She was living there. Her husband was stationed there. And I visited Louise and I saw her while we were there. And then we were married. And then Hunt was sent overseas in June of 43. We were married in July of 42. And during that period, he was stationed around the United States, almost in a complete square, because we started in Norfolk, and we went to Chicago, to Seattle, to San Francisco, to the desert in Lower California. And then he sailed from Coronado, which is part of by San Diego.
So that was of a period of 1 year?
11 months.
11 months, you moved that many times?
We figured out it was 29 times.
Not 29 in 1 year.
Yeah, I think so. Well, it might have, it was about 20, maybe we moved.
moved in the same town more than once, did you?
Not in the same town, just moving from place to place.
Okay.
I'm just abbreviating.
The area you went. Mm. Sounds like a lot of places.
Yeah, it was. But we enjoyed that. I mean, it was you didn't enjoy having the war, but it was there, and you made friends.
Sure.
And the officers were there. They had a bond. Their lives depended on each other, and
sure.
They were all in training, and And
well, now most of this moving around was special training?
Yes, they were all fighter pilots, naval aviators, okay. And they were being carrier trained.
So they were training from one facility to another one. And so the same men, same group went the same time. So it wasn't a matter of making new friends. They
were
the same.
Theoretically it wasn't, but the Navy would take people out or switch you to a different squadron. I think Hunt was in about three squadrons during that
time. So you got to know the ones in each group.
And then they went away, or you did. Mm-hmm. And Great Lakes Naval Air Station was where they did some carrier training. And that was really, I guess, showed how desperate the service was, because they took an old paddle boat, side wheeler, like they had on the Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
very slow moving, clumsy boat, and put a flight deck on it. And the boys had to learn. And they lost men, people we knew. One day we would see them, and the next day the boat just didn't move fast enough, and they had a lot of accidents.
Well, that must have been traumatic.
Yeah, it was terrible. And then we were sent to Seattle, but that was a very short duty. They called it permanent, but we were there, I think, 3 or 4 days. And then the whole squadron flew to Oakland. There was an air base up there. And so we were there almost a year. We were there 6 or 8 months. And that was very nice. We had a cute little apartment. And we went into San Francisco a lot, which we liked. When you'd run into people from Tallahassee, or, you ran into people who were stationed in Carnota. I ran into a girl from Tallahassee. I ran into George Lewis in Oakland.
And where was
he? In San Francisco. Well, we were in a hotel,
And where was he from?
Tallahassee.
Oh, he was
the
from
Lewis
Tallahassee.
Bank in Tallahassee.
Oh, yes.
He married, George married Clifton Van Brunt, who's
a sister named Betty.
Well, Betty Harrison married Cheever Lewis, and they were all friends of mine.
I thought there was a Betty Lewis in college with me, but I may be mixed up. We'll cut that out of the tape.
Well, there may have been, but Betty Harrison married Cheever Lewis, and they're still married.
So where did he go? Where did you say he left for overseas from?
Well, from Coronado, which was down by San Diego.
And so you went down there with him and saw him off.
Yeah. And we were stationed in the desert. The Navy, in its wisdom, when they had marks in the desert, and the weather there was good for flying. It was, you could pretty much count on the weather. But there was no carrier, so they had staked that area in a field, and that's where the pilots would touch down and take off from that, as though it were a
carrier. Now you said the desert. What do you mean?
Desert of California.
California. Oh,
in El Centro.
That's not the.
That's there are 29 pines. And,
and
Palm Springs, I think, is sort of nearby. This was El Centro, which is nothing like either of those things.
Right.
It was there again, we found a little place to live, and we had good friends, and we had a lot of things to laugh about.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was spooky. And then from there we went to Chula Vista. See, that's why I cut it brief. But and then to Coronado.
And so, what year did he go overseas?
In June of '43, and the wives, all went down on the dock and waved goodbye, and this ship pulled out. And it was at dawn, and they were trying to be so secret, and that there we all were. Of course, it was a Navy dock. You weren't supposed to be in the Navy Yard without having good reason to be there. Still, there you were. And this little carrier loaded to the gills. They had so much stuff on it, so many planes and equipment, that it was not flyable. You could, and it had no escort, and it was a converted cargo ship. It was a little It didn't have armored sides or anything. And I don't know, hundreds of boys that were packed in, hung a hammock on the deck. Some of them did that and slept on deck as opposed to being cramped
down
below. And they ended up in the South Pacific. But to fool the enemy, the Navy issued winter flight gear to all the people. So the spies would think they were going to Alaska because the Aleutian Islands were under siege at that time. So the boys carried their heavy winter flight gear to the hot tropics of the South Pacific.
And when they got there, I hope they got some lighter clothing.
I think they did. Yeah, they did.
And where did they land?
Well, they were around, they were in several places. Bougainville, Munda, Vella La Vella. These were the, I have Hunt here telling you about these.
Well, did they, they all went on this one cargo ship.
Yeah.
But then they must have been assigned to regular
carriers. Yes, once they were there, they
switched off.
Hunt was sent with the, they had a new fighter, Navy fighter, carrier-based plane, which was called the F-6F, known as the Hellcat. And this was the first squadron to take them into combat. And so they were based on Munda. And they flew over.
What is Munda?
It's a little island, one of the, I'm trying to think of the name of the chain right now.
M-U-N-D-A?
Mm-hmm, M-U-N-D-A. And they, I know, but anyway.
We were talking about the island, the little island named
Munda,
and it was in the,
I believe it was part of the Solomons.
Solomon Islands.
There were two chains of islands. They were all Melanesian, not Polynesian islands. And they had a few natives there, and they weren't exotic like the Hawaiians. They were, anyway, these young men went there, and their job was to escort bombers that were bombing Bougainville. The Japanese were entrenched on Bougainville, and that was an island that was a step nearer to, you know, the United States. So they were getting rid of them. And they would be shot at and engaged in dogfights with the Japanese Zero plane. And so, and then the bombers would drop the bombs and then go back. I don't know where the bombers were stationed. They weren't stationed on Munda. The fighter planes have a shorter flying range because they carried less fuel.
Well, they went off from a carrier plane.
They
went off from the island.
They
got over there, and they were stationed on an island. So they didn't really fly off of the carrier planes, although they had been trained to do that.
They'd been trained to do that, but I guess they just didn't have the
carrier
available.
So his time was all spent on the island.
Well, it was, yes. And they, of course, they were all being attacked, and I don't know how many of their squadron they lost, but they had pretty heavy casualties.
Yeah, I suppose they did.
And Hunt was, shortly after he was there, he was shot. And he flew his plane back, the instrument there. Bougainville was 200 miles from Munda, and he was shot over there, over the island in a dogfight. And of course, they were trained for certain tactics and procedures when they were fighting.
Sure.
And so Hunt was shooting a Japanese plane that had attacked another plane in their formation, and then another Japanese plane came from beneath him and behind him and shot all the instruments out of the plane, and shot, bullet went through his arm and his leg, two, you know, wounds. And then another man shot the Japanese that had shot Hunt. So Hunt was not killed. He didn't have crash, and he made a tourniquet of his sleeve. His left arm was totally shattered, and put the stick that they fly with between his knees, and then they had a little amulets of ammonia, spirits of ammonia, and he used those to keep from
passing out. Oh.
And their, one of their strategies was to fly as low to the water as possible so that an enemy plane diving on them would have to pull out of his dive before he could get them in his range.
Sure.
So anyway, that's the way he got back to Mundo.
When you're on a fighter flight, you have a co-pilot?
No, you're single.
Nobody's in the plane but you.
No.
So then he was able to get back to Munda, and that must have been a terrible experience.
Well, it was, and he did get back. And another friend, pilot, was hit in the same battle, and he got back too. Hunt landed on land, and he had no landing gears. He had no landing equipment. He had, no instruments or anything.
Because they had all been shot out.
And when he pulled back on the, he had to let go of his arm with tourniquet to pull back on the, I'm talking about your landing, huh? Pull back on the stick to land. And when he did, the trigger for the machine guns and the wings of the plane are on the stick. And he pulled and got that. And so he shot straight this field that he was landing on. And that attracted quite a bit of attention. But he was, the bullets.
Well, I guess because it said the bullets
went up.
When a plane was in a tail down attitude, so the bullets went across the island and into the ocean.
It was a small enough island.
That
they were
lucky.
It didn't cause any problems.
Well, you were lucky, and you were lucky to be to survive. What a terrible accident.
Yeah.
And that year was what?
That was 43.
43.
September.
So, okay, we got Hunt taken care of, but now what happened to you when he went overseas?
Well, I stayed in California, and we, the wives, with a group of wives, we had a little house.
Several of you moved in together.
Yeah, we were. And I ran into Marion McCrory from Jacksonville. Do you remember her at all?
No.
Well, anyway, she was, her husband had gone out on Gillen. Anyhow, we stayed there because we didn't know whether our husbands were really going where they would use that winter flight gear or to the South Pacific. We knew it would be one or the other because that's where the air war was. But we hung around till we got messages because we had little code phrases or something that they could put in a letter and would tell us, and we learned that they had gone. If they went to Alaska, the idea was it would be a short tour. If they went to the South Pacific, the idea was that it would be a long time. So we got the message that they had gone to the South Pacific. And so we all went our separate ways. And never, so then I came back to Gainesville. And then I got a message here, the Navy Department regrets to inform you that your husband has been wounded in action. And I was here in Gainesville when that message came. And then Hunt and I eventually reunited.
Did he come back to Gainesville?
No, his family was in New York City and his home was there. And he was sent to the Naval Hospital, the Brooklyn Naval Hospital.
Uh-huh.
He was sent to hospitals in California.
First. Did you go back out there?
Yeah, I did. I got back to San Francisco. And we had friends who gave us an apartment. And we were there while he was there for
recuperating. How long was he in the hospital?
A year, almost.
A year out there?
Yeah. Well, no. Then he got back to Brooklyn.
Then he got back to Brooklyn.
He got back to Brooklyn. He was shot in September, and it wasn't really a year. He was released the next June.
Well, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So you stayed with him in Brooklyn with his family, or did you?
Well, we had an apartment in Riverdale where his family lived.
Uh-huh.
And they let him. In the beginning, he was in the hospital, but later he could commute to the hospital. He didn't have to live there.
Uh-huh.
And so we were there.
And so he had a full recovery?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was wonderful. What an experience.
Yeah. It was.
Well, now, did you?
Now, let me tell you this one thing. Don't really have to do, but it is interesting. Last September, this squadron, what's left of it,
had a reunion, and they hadn't seen each other since that event. And it was down in Delray, and we went. And it was the most wonderful thing. Those men were all so glad to see each other. They had so much to talk about. They, some of them there were replacements because as these men were injured and some of them killed, they were replaced.
Sure.
But anyway, and the skipper of the squadron was there, and it was just the most wonderful experience.
I guess so. And you saw a lot of your old, the wives that you knew, too.
Well, no, I didn't. I didn't know most of those wives. Unfortunately, they most of them been divorced and remarried. And the one man I remembered, his wife was one of the ones who lived with us. They had been divorced, but I remembered him. Mm-hmm. And the guy who shot Hunt was there, and I gave him a big hug.
You mean they shot the guy that shot
the Japanese?
The Japanese that shot, huh?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I
was there. Oh, I should say so.
Yeah.
Well, he certainly looks wonderful for somebody that's been through all that.
Yeah. Well,
what
fine.
An exciting thing to do.
But it was interesting.
Have the reunion. Well, had you started a family by then? I didn't ask.
No, no. We our first child was born in 1942 in November. So, 44.
I was going to say.
We were married in 42.
Right. You were back.
44. 40. He came home in September of 41, and then, after that we.
No, he didn't come home in 41. That didn't work.
Yeah, 40. We were married in 42. He came home in 43. A child was born in 44.
So his accident was in, he really wasn't overseas very long.
No, he wasn't.
Accident.
No.
So,
no.
Okay, your child was born in 43.
Combat immediately.
Tell me about your first child.
Well, her name is Ann McKelvey Brown, and she lives outside Boston in Concord, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And she's just become a grandmother, and we have a great granddaughter.
Yes, and I saw the picture the other day.
Yeah.
Well, so when she was born, you were living in Brooklyn?
No, we never lived in Brooklyn.
We lived
in Riverdale.
Riverdale.
On the Hudson River.
On the Hudson River. He commuted from there to the Brooklyn Hospital.
Yeah, well, that wasn't much of a
that one. Riverdale is in what part of New York?
The Bronx.
In the Bronx, okay. See, I wasn't familiar with that. So that's where you lived when your daughter, and what is her, you say her name was Ann?
Ann McKelvey.
McKelvey. And so you stayed there how many years?
Well, we stayed there about 4 or 5 years, and I love that. I loved all her friends, and it was beautiful there. The Hudson River, just...
Right, so when he recuperated, he started working in New York City.
Yes, he worked in a bank for a while,
uh-huh.
And then he worked at McGraw-Hill in publishing.
Uh-huh. Your journalism and his publishing sort of coincided.
Well, yeah.
But
and
you never worked again.
No, no.
And
I
so
worked,
how long?
But not in a paying job.
Right, not in a paying job.
Yeah, we lived in Connecticut for 27 years,
so
and our children grew up there.
You moved from the Bronx to New Connecticut, and where in Connecticut?
Wilton.
And your other children?
Archer was born in Riverdale.
In Riverdale.
And then Brissy was born in Wilton.
Okay, now what year was Archer born?
Kelly was 44, Archer was 46, 2 years later. And Brucey was 8 years
and
after that.
And then you were in Connecticut.
Yeah.
He was born in Connecticut.
But she's a girl.
She.
Brucey's a she.
Brucey.
Mary Bruce.
Mary Bruce, okay.
Yeah.
And you call her Brucey.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you raised your children in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And they lived, how many years were you there?
27. 28.
28
yeah.
years. Mm-hmm. And Hunt commuted to
New York
City?
Every day, 4 hours a day. He did it partly by train, but then the train service got so bad he decided to drive, so he drove in and out every day.
Your children loved that area, and I suppose they're all three married now?
Yes, but none of them stayed there. One of them's here in Gainesville, that's Archer.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelly's in outside Boston, and Brucey, the youngest, is in New Mexico.
So they're all scattered too.
Yeah.
Well, now we're going to talk a little bit more about Mary and Sam. So you were back in Florida, you were not in Florida, of course, when Mary died.
No, but I came immediately.
She died in April of 1963.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, she died so very suddenly.
Yes.
I think she had a heart attack during the night.
Right. And then Sam died in April of 1975.
Yeah.
And he was a native and lifelong resident of Gainesville, it says here.
And he knew everybody,
yes,
everywhere.
He was a member of the board of directors of First Federal Savings and Loan and retired vice president of the Baird Hardware. Now, some of this will be in that other article, but I'll read a little bit about this. And retired vice president of Baird Hardware, he was past president of the Gainesville Golf and Country Club and a U.S. Army World War I veteran. And then it says he's survived by a brother, R.W. Mixon Gainesville, and four sisters, and three nieces, and so on. Well, he was a wonderful man. We all knew and loved him.
Of course, his great interest was flowers. He had roses that bloomed all winter, and he was rosarian for the state of Florida at one time.
I didn't know that.
And, I mean, he had the roses that bloomed from spring to fall, and camellias that groom from fall to spring. So we always had beautiful bowls of flowers in the house.
Well, tell me a little bit about Sam and your memories of him. Can you think of anything special that we haven't talked about him?
Well, not really. I can think that of things. He was, you know, he was fun and he was funny, and he taught. He tried to teach me to fish. I wasn't a good pupil. The only time I ever caught a fish, I thought he had put it on my hook as a joke.
Where did he take you fishing?
Well, they down on the Ocklawaha mostly, I think.
Uh-huh.
And maybe some lakes. He and Mamie used to fish, but I don't think she was
now
a
you
fisherman.
Call Mary Mamie?
M-A-N-I-E, Mamie. It was my effort to say Mary when I was a baby. And he liked to play golf. He used to play in what he called a gangsome, because, you know, a foursome is the official limit.
Uh-huh.
In Gainesville now they allow fivesomes, but I don't know how many were in that group, and they'd play on Sunday morning. He'd play with the Hamptons, and I think Reed McKenzie played, and I don't know, he had a group of friends that all played golf together, and they called themselves a gangsome.
Well, he was very well known in Gainesville, and loved and liked by a lot of people, and I don't know whether he ever served much in the government of Gainesville or the politics of Gainesville. I don't remember that
he did. I don't think
he
did, but I think he was friends with those who did, and I think he had
some influence.
Had some influence, because I can remember things. For instance, when Hunt was shot, and I said, Uncle Sam, you can find out if you can talk to the right people what has happened, because you got a message, wounded in action, you don't know what that means.
No.
And Uncle Sam did know some people to get in touch with, and we did get information.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, they never had property on Kingsley Lake.
No, they never had a lake house.
Mm-hmm.
I always wish they would, but they never did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Uncle Sam liked, he liked Cowpen Lake, because that was remote. He liked a more remote. I liked the
park.
The friends that were in close contact with Kingsley. But his idea was to be out where there was quiet and fishing.
Right.
But he never had one.
Well, now Mary was a.
She was not a joiner. She was a wonderful mother and wife, and her house was immaculately run, and we had a nice woman named Emma who worked for us all the time I was growing up. And then along about end of high school, Daisy came to work, and I don't know whether you remember Daisy. She sort of became a city institution when Uncle Sam died, because so many people employed her to help with parties and to do things for them. And she was wonderful. So, and I know that I was surprised. Mamie never joined any women's organizations.
She had to join the women's club for you to be a little woman.
I wasn't a little woman.
You were not?
No, I felt very outside, but I was invited to dances there.
How could you do that? Well, they wouldn't let you do that in my day.
Well,
your mother had to join.
I never joined.
And you got to go to all of them or just
occasionally? No, just occasionally.
I see.
Just occasionally.
Well, you see, my mother joined just so we could be little women. Yeah. That was because she was not a joiner either.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But Maynard did a very important research thing for the League of Women Voters.
Oh, did she?
She wasn't in League of Women Voters when I was growing up. But then I guess once, you know, she didn't have, she had an empty nest, she got more active. And I can't remember what she researched, but it was something, a very important study that she did for them. I wish I could remember. Maybe one day I will. But I was living in Connecticut then.
Sure.
And I used to come down here every year. Bring the children. And they loved being down here. And, you know, it was warm and the flowers were blooming. And we'd go back and it would be cold and muddy. But we loved the snow. But you don't have snow all winter.
No, you
clean
sure
white
don't.
Snow. You have ice.
Right.
But we didn't mind the ice either because up there they closed the schools. So then we all had a vacation.
Sure. So you stayed in Connecticut till Hunt retired or even after?
No, he retired.
In what year?
And then we moved, of all things, to New Hampshire and lived there 10 years.
Did you?
But then we began to notice it was cold and dark. And so at that point, Hunt was still skiing. And would sometimes it'd have storms. We'd have to go to the grocery store and skis. We liked that.
So you skied too?
Well, I could ski that much, but I wasn't ever a skier. Mm-hmm. But I could cross country a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And then you moved to Florida in what year?
87.
So you've been back here?
12 years.
12
now.
Years. Very I nice to have you back in Gainesville.
Well, we enjoyed being back, too.
I can't think of anything else to ask you. Can you think of anything that we haven't talked about that we should have?
No. I remember back in high school when I was there, they had boys' clubs and girls' clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And they played an active part in our lives
because
they had dances
every
about 4 or 5 times a year, each one of them.
Yes. So
and the university boys would come to those dances.
Right.
That was fun.
It was wonderful having the university
be
all male in our day.
Yeah, 3,000 men.
Right. It was pretty nice.
And no girls.
No girls.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great town to grow up in. And but I will give you this to edit, and you may add anything that you've forgotten or correct any mistakes.
I remember some of the other teachers. Mrs. Olson was our Latin teacher, and she was a splendid teacher.
And Clara Olson?
Clara Floyd was our teacher, too.
No, that was a Clara Olson that taught me out at P.K. Young, but that would have, this might have been the same Mrs. Olson.
I don't know. She seemed to me quite elderly, but then everybody seemed to me quite elderly.
Well, right. She was elderly to me, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same one or not.
And Phyllis Gerald Grimm taught French.
Uh-huh. Did you take French?
Yeah, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we all love her. She was great. And Mrs. Black. Anyway, she was a good English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
We had very good teachers. We got, I think, an excellent education.
I think so. Gainesville's always had good teachers.
Yeah. And I remember everybody was scared to death of Professor Buchholz. But we all respected him. We thought he was quite an educator.
Right.
And he had a very good school.
Mm-hmm. He kept the discipline going, and I think that's so important.
Yeah,
this day and age.
We all admired him.
Sure. Well, I thank you very much, but if we, like I say, we'll edit it and give you a copy of it at the end, and I thank you very much for giving me your time.
Well, thank you for your patience.
Oh, I loved doing it.